So, did you like the new technique we went over today?
I wish you would introduce the episode, silly boy.
Oh, sorry. I wanted to introduce it in a new way. What was I going to say?
I don't know. Just do it.
Oh, man. All right. Hey, everybody. You're back with Dave and Ed, and this is To the Death Podcast.
Episode 21.
21.
Today, we interview Carl Previck, Silver Fox BJJ. He has three locations currently.
Two.
Two locations currently and one affiliate.
Correct.
Sam.
I am glad that you pronounced his name correctly, though.
I know. I pay attention.
Yeah, that's impressive. So he has, I don't know, what's the one, is it Whippany or East Hanover, technically?
He said East Hanover.
Okay, East Hanover, Butler, and Saddlebrook.
Carl has been around
Silver Fox. You didn't say Silver Fox.
I said Silver Fox.
No, you didn't.
For sure did.
I was not paying attention.
I know you weren't.
Silver Fox, BJJ Butler, Silver Fox, BJJ Saddlebrook, and East Hanover.
Yes. Today we talk about some of his beginnings with BJJ. He started in 1993. I mean, that's as early as you could have started it.
Now, I feel like he was intentionally trying to not give us his age, though.
I know. I don't think you understand that sometimes people do not like to disclose their age. It's kind of inappropriate to ask.
I thought that was mostly a woman thing, though.
It's not about sex.
No, I'm not being sexist. I've never known a man that had a problem discussing his age. So it was new to me.
Camel said it was an inappropriate question when we asked him.
Well, now the two of them have something in common. They're both from Eastern Europe.
Was he originally from there?
Or
he
yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
See?
I should
maybe
pay attention.
That is the similarity.
Similar.
Do you dislike when I point out how young you actually are?
No, I hate when you tell people how fat and old I look.
I don't say fat and old. They see you.
No. You point it out. No. First of all, there's people that have listened to this that didn't know me and would not have known how fat I am unless you said something.
They see the pictures. Did you not see the audiogram with you and your belly hanging out? We have listeners now that are tagging their food, hashtag Ed Diet.
I ate too much food today as well. You'll hear in this episode about my McDonald's incident that I had on Tuesday.
Unfortunately, that's the direction Ed's traveling in now because he thinks bulimia is okay.
Well, one of the things that I'm happy about is my weight has not gone up. I have hovered 2 months straight at 206.
So I feel softer, but same with me. I'm hovering 195.
We need to be better. We got to do better.
I'll let you be better for me.
I've been being better all over you these past couple days.
I don't know.
Over, under, over, under, over, under, over, under.
That was good. Can you put that on a long loop?
Sure.
Over, under, over, under. I need to move more.
I know. It's fun to ask all these high-level black belts how they could help you, even though they haven't seen you roll. But it's still fun to get their perspective on it.
Do you think that they would do a facepalm
if
they watched us roll?
For sure.
I wonder. I've been wondering that as we're traveling to these schools, wondering where we would line up in there. Because just like we talked about in this episode, promotions are really, there's no set standard.
The discretion of the teacher.
Right.
But like we've both said, you know how good you are. You don't need to have this whatever belt around your waist. You know when you're getting crushed by my over-under that you need to be better.
I took your back today.
You did. Did you doubt me?
No.
Not even close.
But the whole class knew that I took your back today.
You were giggling about it.
It was fun.
Yeah, but what about the next round when I just laid right in your face?
What about my next round? Huh?
What happened?
Nice, beautiful Ezekiel. Leg drags, Ezekiels.
Yeah, Kyle's got a bum knee. Doesn't count.
I wasn't talking. I wasn't going to say his name.
I'm just saying that.
Kyle's a white belt. He's brand new. I feel good about myself when I beat up the white belts.
I feel great when I beat you up.
Just me?
And your brother. I love beating him up.
Yeah, but you said that he's the country. What did you call him?
I don't know. He gets a little upset when I call him names. He's not really good at taking jokes. Just a hillbilly.
Hillbilly version of me.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
I don't believe that. I'm sorry, Matt, even though you're not listening. I don't think that anymore.
He's not listening. He says he's on like episode 9. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
We can thank some of our biggest fans for listening to every single episode.
Go ahead.
John Galante.
John Galante listens to every episode.
And who is your friend that you said listens to every episode?
Joseph Downer. I love you, buddy.
His feedback was a downer.
Yeah, he said he doesn't like episodes with just us, which made me giggle because that's your favorite.
They're my favorite, yeah. I don't want to have to chase people down. I like to just sit down. When we started this, that was kind of the point, and the whole thing just changed so quickly. I'm not angry at the direction that it's gone, but I want to go back to more just the two of us.
Oh, I know. You think that you're trying to trick me into thinking like, oh, I ran out. I can't get any more guests. You're actively.
I will show you my phone.
You are actively trying not to so that it could just be us.
How many people did you reach out to today?
Nobody. It's not my job.
You have
already established our jobs.
You're reaching out to one person.
I'll reach out.
Okay.
Happy.
One person.
How about we could talk about the episode a little bit, right? How about the episode?
The episode was great. I really had a good time sitting down, speaking with him. I liked a lot of the things that he said. I liked a lot of his stories, too. I liked the chew toy.
I mean, you brought that up, but yes.
Because I heard it on something else. I couldn't remember what he called it.
I like his...
Aww.
He agreed with you on a lot of stuff. It was kind of rubbing me the
wrong
way.
That's because we're old. I honestly think that's what it was. While we were talking and we were agreeing and you were starting to get sad, I thought it was an age thing because we're both older than you.
Yeah, I think people enjoy more when they agree with me.
No.
Yeah.
What do you mean, our listeners?
The guests.
No.
Like when Jamie was on, that was fun.
That was fun. I enjoyed it too. But did the people like that?
I don't know. Ask me. You can ask me. I got numbers to prove it. I'm not going to say the numbers, but the numbers on my side.
Phone numbers?
No, the viewer numbers.
Viewer numbers.
The most viewed episodes are the ones where the people agree with me. I'm not going to prove it, but I'm saying it.
I'm not sure that that's the reason.
That's what I believe.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm. Does that hurt your feelings?
No, not at all. I don't have feelings.
I have hurt them, so that's a lie.
Yes, you have hurt them. No, you haven't hurt them. You've just touched them, struck the nerve.
Whatever.
You can't really hurt my feelings.
Okay.
Your opinion doesn't matter to me.
Are you kidding me?
At all.
I teach you so much about life and jiu-jitsu.
Life. How about the life lesson I taught you today?
What did you teach me today?
Well, we won't talk about it on the podcast.
I know what you're talking about. Well, what about the omoplata details that you've shown me?
Well, I'm glad that they worked out for you.
That's all you got to say about it?
I thought that they... When? I don't remember. You got stuck somewhere or was I getting stuck? How did we get to the...
We got to it because I was getting stuck.
Oh, trying to omoplata me, right?
No. I was trying to omoplata Dan and he was very active with his knee, putting it on me, stepping over... And I lost control of it. And then you pointed out a detail.
Yes.
And I listened.
I'm not good at that detail, but I knew that it would be right up your alley.
It works.
I saw you hit it today.
Yes.
I know.
I was
so very
happy.
Proud of you.
You're proud of me?
I was.
I'm proud of you. You hit an Ezekiel. That's my favorite submission. One of them.
100%.
It's a 100% move once you get there.
Is it though?
I don't know. I have a hard time getting out of it, so that means it's legit.
Can you get out of it? Have you gotten out of it?
Not at a certain point, it's impossible to get out of.
So it's 100%. 98.9.
Yes.
99.9?
Yep.
One.
No. So how you been feeling these past couple weeks? I feel like we're hitting a little rhythm. My schedule's about to go back to normal.
I can't wait because really, Trish, trying to do podcasts one day, I mean, it's not going to free up that much more because gym is open. People's gyms are open. It's harder to meet up with people, but it's definitely going to make it a little bit easier for us for doing our one-on-ones and videos because we have more videos coming. I'm also looking forward to our little private sessions.
Are we have any updates on the shirts?
Yes.
Go ahead.
There's been no progress.
I hate you. I really just love shirts.
You know what?
I
had the computer in my hand the other day, and I'm like, I just got to send this guy this email with the logo. That's all it is. Email the logo. He wants it in a specific format, which I have on my computer, and I just closed the computer and went to bed.
You gotta be kidding me. I just want new shirts.
We're getting them. Don't worry. How about the other shirts that we need to develop? Three more shirts in the making. We're not going to talk about them here. But
yeah, we don't want you guys to steal our ideas. It's a really good idea. Made me giggle. There's not many things you could say that make me giggle. That was one of them.
I know. You hate my dad jokes. This podcast is about dad jokes.
You know what, though? You got to keep taking your shots. I know I talked down to you about how terrible your jokes are, but just keep trying because eventually
right.
You hit.
You miss 1,000% of the shots that you don't take.
Sure, sure, sure.
What's the saying?
Just stop.
Come on, bring it up.
How about we have new quotes? We already talked about that.
Okay, give me a new quote. It's got nothing. You should leave that pause in.
No. I don't have any.
You got no new quote? Can we just Google quotes real quick?
I got one.
And bust one out?
No. No quotes.
The only thing to fear is fear itself. Don't fear Ed's over-under.
You should fear it.
I know.
I've been killing with it. How about those details I was showing? I'm just the best. I'm the best ever.
I'm very curious to know if those details are going to be as important when you don't have the belly. I didn't say it wasn't going
to
work.
Listen to me. You said, so you keep saying, you can't talk out both sides of your mouth. Either I'm going to have the belly forever or I'm eventually going to lose it. Which one is it? Because you keep playing
both
sides.
You're going to have the belly forever.
All right, so then
but
shut up about that.
You insist it's going.
It's going. 2021 is going to be my year. So we're just like, we're getting ready for 2021. You know, I'm pacing myself. Pace yourself. That's my motto.
What's the motto?
Pace myself.
Pace yourself?
Got to pace
yourself.
Are you
going to put that on your vision board?
I'm going to put it on my grave. I paced myself.
You did. Your whole life was pacing yourself. How about your meals? When are you going to start pacing those?
I can make 1,000 excuses right now. I just need to be better. That's it.
What exactly was the meal you had the other day?
Oh, I had 2 cheeseburgers with Big Mac sauce and a large french fry and then some of my wife's soda. But that's not the problem.
Like, wasn't it 2 double cheeseburgers?
Yeah,
though?
2 McDoubles. But that wasn't the problem. That's a regular meal for me. I could bang that out. Give me a half hour, I'm back to normal. What happened was I was snacking. You know when you just grab a bag of something and you just, you know, I'm finishing a whole bag of pretzels. Then my wife calls out, hey, I'm going to McDonald's. You want something? I'm never going to say no to that. So she got me my regular meal, but I was already filled with a partial amount of food. So now when I ate this McDonald's, put me over the top.
You know what? Since we can't get sponsors, maybe people will just buy you gift cards to McDonald's.
No, that's the opposite of what I want. I don't know what I wish you guys would just send me messages of either hate or love. I just want messages.
You sound very needy right now.
I'm very needy because I'm not.
You definitely are very needy.
I don't get enough attention from you.
What are you talking about? I text you every day.
Yeah, but nothing.
I call you all the time.
Nothing of substance.
As soon as you answer the phone, you call me names and say, "What do you want?" Do you remember what you said to me yesterday? We can't say it on this podcast.
No, because every time we like finish doing something somewhere and we're in different cars, you call me like either right. You know, usually right away. You call me. And we talk and whatever, fine. So
whatever, fine.
As we
are we friends, Ed?
Barely. As we left, I was like, oh, he's not going to call me. This is good. I set up my podcast. I'm listening. I get like 10, 15 minutes into it. Now I'm locked in. I'm just in my zone, autopilot on the way home, just taking in content. That's what I like to do.
I gave you content.
No. Then you call me up and now I got to answer my phone, which is not hooked up to my thing. So it's very dangerous. And I'm very upset because I'm on the highway and I'm in the mode of just listening now. I don't want to talk. So yes, I was very frustrated.
Well, we didn't talk for very long.
We talked for at least 20 minutes.
And then what happened as soon as we got off the phone?
What happened?
I called you right back.
Yeah. What was your problem?
Because something occurred to me. I don't remember what it was now. Do you?
No. What are we doing? We're talking about nothing here.
I told you, I just want more time of the two of us. So what other things stuck out in your mind from this podcast?
Let's see.
Put the mic by your face.
We gotta listen to these more before we put them out.
That's what I said to you. When we record earlier in the week, you always have the episode up for us to listen to before we record the intro outro. Then it's fresh in my mind.
Well, this one or the next one's going to be the last one where it's like this.
Yeah, the next one is going to be late in the week too. But maybe we can squeeze one in before that. Nope, we definitely can't. Never mind.
Okay. So let's just get into it.
We'll get into the episode.
We'll get
into
the episode.
The Silver Fox.
The Silver Fox himself. He, you know, I'll go to it. The longevity part of it. He's an older man. How old is he? We don't know.
We can Google it,
but he's an older man. He's trying to take care of his body, and it's going to help us because I'm fat. Dave's old, so we need to pace ourselves. That's the motto of this episode, is to pace yourself so you can stay longer and have fun forever.
Longevity in jiu-jitsu.
There we go. So I hope you guys enjoy. This is To the Death Podcast.
Episode 21. Today, we are at Silver Fox BJJ in Butler. This is a brand new school, but it's not the only Silver Fox. So how many do you have now?
Well, personally, I'm involved in 2 schools. Well, it's 1 school, 2 locations. It's because I want the same culture, same atmosphere at both locations. So our older one, which is where biggest percentage of the students are, is in Saddlebrook, New Jersey. And then one of my black belts just opened up another school in East Hanover. He's one of my black belts at Silver Fox BJJ East Hanover. But my show is Saddlebrook and Butler.
Okay, so then he would be like an affiliate.
Correct.
Okay, so now how we got to wanting to talk to you is, actually, I met you many years ago. We both started with George Cernak.
Oh, nice.
Okay, and then a good friend of ours, which we just interviewed a couple of weeks ago, Kemmel Verhoeven.
Yeah.
So, but I actually met you, like I said, years ago when I started training with George in 2006. I had met you back then. And then I just knew that you were like, for lack of better words, a local legend, you know. You've been training for so long. What year did you start training?
I started in 93.
93. I was telling Ed, I was like, this is the Wild West. So you've got to have some really great stories. I know your origin story is out there, always training with Henzo. But is there any stories from the Wild West that like really got you hooked into needing to add jiu-jitsu to your martial arts training?
You know, it's kind of funny because I actually started, you know, training on a regular basis in 1993. But back then, I was training primarily stand-up. My instructor in stand-up, he wasn't teaching so much, so I was either teaching classes or some of the black belts would get together. We would train. We'd train just about anything, go to a lot of seminars, Muay Thai, Jeet Kune Do. And, you know, Jeet Kune Do, if you know, is, there's a lot of different disciples. They, you know, some of them focus on grappling, other guys on different things. And one of my regular training partners at the time lent me a video, VHS tape, Gracie in Action 1. And he said, check this out. By the way, these guys are coming to Sheraton Tara in Parsippany, right on 80. You know where that is, right?
Yeah.
And so I looked at the tape. I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. So I said, I'll check it out. We wind up going, this is back in 1991.
91. Ed, were you born yet?
I was 2 years old.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I tell some of my younger students when they get a little bit full of themselves. I say, listen, you were still peeing in, in your diapers when I was already, training. But at the time, it was a weekend-long seminar, and everybody showed up. It was Helio was there, Hickson, Hoyler, Hoyce, Horian, everybody. Like literally, there was like, I remember about 10 adults, and they brought some kids as well. And basically, at the end of the seminar, they would roll with everybody. And you feel like a baby. So you'd say, you know what, I'm going to try to incorporate this in my training. And at the time, basically, you did it for a weekend and, you know, nothing else for, you know, for another year. And then 93, Kukuk, who was the first American black belt, not a lot of people know of him, and, you know, probably... he opened up the first school out here in New Jersey, actually. And he was teaching in New York, Philly, and New Jersey.
So but we talked to Jamie a little bit about Kukuk, right?
George
was mentioning it.
So long story short, at the time, though, I only trained once a week. I would train 6 days a week stand-up and one day a week jiu-jitsu. I was just more interested, just kind of, oh, I'm going to get this as an add-on and, you know, just in case if I go to the ground. And as time progressed, you realize how intricate and technical it is. And then I'm, you know, my personality is like, if I'm interested in something, I need to have it. You know, I was like, oh, I gotta get better at this. So I slowly started training instead of once a week, you know, two times a week, three times a week, and so forth. Now I train 7 days a week.
So when you were training, you had specific, just a couple training partners you were working with that you would meet up?
At the time, I was working in the city in corporate finance. So it was hard for me to train 7 days a week with training partners, but I, you know, or go to class. So I would try to go to class as much as possible. And then, you know, guys would come into my house at 6 a.m. mm-hmm. to train. And then I'd, you know, take a quick shower, hop on the bus and go to the city. You know, now I can train pretty much whenever I want to. You know, I just try to train 7 days a week, some days light, some days hard. And that's what I do now. So it's different now. Now, you know, you could train literally if you want. You could train in the morning, you could train in the afternoon, you could train at night. Back in the day, it was just, you know, a couple classes, you know, during the week. Then Kukuk teamed up with Henzo to make some tapes. Henzo started traveling to the U.S. to make the tapes, and he would teach. He would do some privates. He would teach him some classes, stay for a month, and then go back to Brazil. And then come back again, and then I think in 94, I want to say either 94 or 95, he moved it to New Jersey permanently, and the rest is history. I've been with him ever since.
That's great. Yeah. So
no, you go ahead.
I've lost my thought. This
that's
happens.
Like me. I had that
thought
problem all the time
because of where you were going. Okay, so in 91 is when you started your jiu-jitsu training. So 29 years ago, almost 30 years ago. How old were you at that time?
Oh man. I stopped counting after a while. So, but it's funny, you know, to be honest with you, I wouldn't consider it starting my training.
Just
that's
your
the first time. No, but that's the first time, you know, you get exposed to it. And you don't, it's sort of like, think about if you went to a Muay Thai, I'm assuming you're not training Muay Thai, but no. I could be wrong. But if you went to a Muay Thai seminar for the weekend, how much would you know? You would know nothing, very little. again, in 92, I went to another seminar, and they got, you know, at that, this time they was in the city, and they started to splinter because people start to, you know, start to get, the growth was there. So guys start to splinter. Then in 93, I started training regularly, but still, again, 93, 94, I was training maybe jiu-jitsu once or twice a week. You know, you get a lot faster, better, a lot faster training 4 or 5 days a week than sure. you do exactly. once or twice a week, you know? But back then it was, it was different. It was
rough. You were just sprinkling it into your training.
Yeah.
So mostly no-gi stuff, I assume, or would you play in the gi?
We played in the gi too, but it was, you know, basically whatever you showed up in, you know, no gi was like guys would show up in shorts, no rash guard, no t-shirt sometimes. You know, guys would usually for no gi was wearing gi pants and t-shirt. That was no gi. There were no rash guards.
That's how I do it. I'm still trying to keep the gi just as strong.
Yeah, he still trains this way.
That's going old school. Yeah.
Did a lot of guys show up with shoes, wrestling shoes?
Yeah, or? Sometimes. Yeah. You know, sometimes wrestling shoes. It was unusual. I think it was very rough because people didn't, at the time, people, when they wanted to try it, they really wanted to see what they could do.
Yeah.
You know, it was not like, I want to try. What is this jiu-jitsu about? No, it's like, let me try. I want to see, you know, basically what was left unspoken was, I want to see what I could do against you, your guy, or, you know.
Right. I just listened to another podcast that you were on, and you referred to, you made an analogy like, the guy wanted you to be his chewing gum or something like that. Does that sound right? I loved the analogy. I could go back and listen if you can't
chewing
remember.
Maybe a toy or something.
Chew toy. That's what it was. Yeah. I'm not going to be your chew toy. That's what you said.
And I remember one time I was training and we were training. At the time, it was hard to get training, like consistent training. There were not so many classes. If you had a rough schedule, you'd tried to train wherever, and I remember I was training at a YMCA in Somerville, I think, I forget, and you know, it was a couple of guys that used to train together, including the guy that gave me the first VHS tape, and a guy comes in, and it was like war. Like, I thought it was, okay, we're playing jiu-jitsu. The guy was literally trying to stomp my head. Like, it's literally trying to stomp my head. I got pissed. I arm-locked him so hard, he screamed, and as he's, like, he screamed. I kept it a little bit, split second longer, I think. And then, then he just disengages. He just started running on the floor, puking along the way. You know?
Well, now
that's not the only time guys threw up.
Now, this is a great transition. So you see the two of us here, and neither of us are in fantastic shape, but Ed is really in very poor shape. He's been training since 2007. Fairly inconsistently, all right? Last night, we're talking about somebody that trains. Again, once again, he has thrown up during class. How do you feel about that?
It wasn't from working too hard. I had too much McDonald's before class.
McDonald's. That explains the size of him.
How long was the time frame of McDonald's to training?
2 hours. I thought it was enough time. I got to class, I felt terrible. And I was like, yeah, I'll be all right. Did one roll, and then immediately after, I went right to the bathroom and threw up violently.
But he was happy because he was back down to 215.
You know, that could be a couple of things. McDonald's could be the culprit, could be the time frame. 2 hours is not enough. And then, you know, you could have been going a little too hard, you know.
You think I would learn that 13 years down the line.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go back to, you were saying that it was hard to train, but did you do competitions in the early days at all?
Because no, I know those were hard to find, too. No, I did not start competing until I was a black belt, by which time I was in my mid-40s.
Wow.
So I basically missed out on, in competition, there is so many factors that come into winning that, you know, technique is just one of them. That, you know, I hyper-focused over my jiu-jitsu career on technique. But you cannot underestimate the power of all the other elements, you know, be it, you know, guys cut weight, you know, what mental frame they're in, how do they warm up, what's the matchup, what's the strategy. There's so many possible things. So by the time I basically started competing when I got my black belt, and literally my only thought was to go in and submit the guy. That was my only thought. So my very first competition, I submitted everybody all the way into the finals. It was Grapplers Quest West. For those of you who don't know, that was probably, other than the IBJJF and ADCC, probably the premier organization, besides, and Naga, them and Naga. And But my second tournament was at first Nogi Worlds 2007. And basically, I had a Brazilian guy whose father was a 6-degree black belt at the time, and he took me down as off the takedown, put him in an inverted triangle. And I basically, my only thought was to submit him whether with the inverted triangle or get, you know, trying to get the Kimura off it. I, you know, like when I finally pried his arm open from his own shorts, I rip it and he grabbed onto my shorts. So I like yanked it off and grabbed his shorts. And you're not allowed to grab your my shorts. So it got so blatant, so we couldn't progress. And so I complained to the ref at one point. But long story short, I lost on 2 points. And afterwards, the guy came to me, the referee came to me, his father came to me, and his trainer came to me. And said, basically, in a nice way, you dumbass. All you had to do is put your hands, so instead of stay on your side trying to invert a triangle to him, just put your hands square up to him. You would have gotten 3 points for passing the guard, okay? And you would have won the fight, the match.
And they all pointed this out after.
Yeah, didn't occur to me. It was not even, it was a 10-minute match. It did not occur to me. I basically laser focused on submission. So it was clearly just lack of understanding and playing the rules. There's actually, if you look at YouTube 2007 Nogi Worlds trailer, you'll see me walking off the match with the mat. He shredded my rash guard. He could not escape the inverted triangle. He literally put his foot through the rash guard. So I'm walking, it's like two of us walking off the mat with my rash guard shredded. So long story short, you know, when you compete, you need to understand not just, you know, the endurance, you know, you may have an adrenaline dump and, you know, there's a lot of different things that could go potentially wrong, or even you may lose to a guy that you technically better than, but he just understands the rules better. He's had a better strategy. He's more relaxed. He's more experienced. So basically, I basically dove into the black belt pool first thing without having any competition experience. So yeah. I don't recommend that for people.
This is super interesting to me because usually it's the opposite. People compete a lot, white belt, blue belt, then they start to fall off, and then once they get to the higher belts, they're like, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
What made you want to jump into competition after all these years of training and not competing?
I didn't want to do it.
You didn't want to do it.
That's what made me do it. I didn't want to do it. I, you know, I was afraid of it. I, you know, that's what I said. You know, I got to do it. You know, I got to sort of conquer that fear. I got to just suck it up and do it. And I did it for, I only competed 2 to 3 times a year. For about, I did probably about 7 years, and that was it. You know, I just, like now, if I compete, it just takes too much mental energy for me to focus on my own training. My game is better than it was 10 years ago, significantly better than it was 10 years ago. But I don't, if I take away mental energy from my training, so basically I focus on in jiu-jitsu and my own training to progress as a student, on running the academy, be a good teacher, and also be a coach to my, you know, senior students. So if I start to compete, I literally, you know, 6 weeks before, I don't, you know, and 2 weeks after, I don't care about a whole lot of things. So you really can't do that if you're running an academy. Because then if you are, something else is getting a short end of the stick.
True.
You know?
I agree with that.
So now, once again, let's get back to Ed's horrible condition. Ed, could you do me a favor and stand up real quick?
I'm not standing up.
Come on, stand up.
You made your point.
Did you see what he looked like when he walked in the door?
I wear a big shirt so I can hide myself.
I want to see Ed compete more. But I was just wondering if you had any thoughts for the weight class that he should be in.
What weight class you compete?
The last competition I did was kind of like a super fight. It was 200. That was what we weighed in at. Ideally, I compete best at 170, so I got about 40 pounds to lose.
Yeah, that's you know, here's the thing is people don't understand. It's the other thing, especially if there's a day before weigh-in. You know, if you compete at 200, a guy that walks around 220 will easily make 200. Not easily, but it's not going to be a stretch for him to make 200. So, you know, if your frame is 170 and you're going against guys that walk around 220, you know, that's a – I personally consider 20 pounds a rounding error in jiu-jitsu, but, you know, when you're facing a difference of 50 pounds, it becomes material.
That's interesting. 20 pounds a rounding error. So that means you're within
You just meant round. You're round.
No. So My good friend Dave here likes to complain about how fat and heavy I am, and the only reason I can crush him and slow him down.
I don't say, no, you can go back and listen. Once again, I do not say that is the only
reason.
It's
not the only reason, but it's a main reason.
It is a big factor.
All right, a big factor. So how do you deal, because I know that your game is very built on dealing with stronger, heavier opponents to try to avoid getting smothered. What advice can you give my good friend?
Move.
Don't
see,
stop
that's
moving.
My enemy. Movement is my enemy.
No, movement needs to be a friend.
Laying there and taking it is one of my strengths.
No, then you're just suffering. If you suffer, jiu-jitsu should be about fun. Ultimately, guys, and I do believe this, you need to figure out how to make training fun. And there will be times, and those times may stretch into weeks or even months, where you're going to be in a slump and it's just going to be miserable. But, you know, over the long span of time, jiu-jitsu needs to be fun. So you need to figure out how to make training be fun. You know, focus on learning technique, just adding on to your technical arsenal. Every time somebody goes to class, they should try to remember, do one or two things better or learn one or two things. That's it. That's your job. It's not, your job is not to beat the other guy. You want to beat the other guy, go compete. That's when your job becomes that.
Yeah, so how about, you should listen to me when I try to give you advice. Last night, I'm trying to give him advice. He's just shooing me. I got to clean.
It was the end of the night.
So
I
what?
Told you yesterday I had things to do.
It takes 1 minute. You could just one
we
minute.
We did talk for more than 1 minute. You were trying to fix my over-under defense yet again. No, it was the passing.
Yeah.
Over-under passing, that's right, because I was trying to pass Dan's guard, Dan. We might have dialed it in, but he was angry that I didn't take the time last night after I asked him the question to drill it again and again. It was the end of the night. I have to wake up for work at 4 a.m. I had to leave.
What do you think about excuses?
Excuses are the reason for everything.
How can he stay? Like, he's so stiff. Both of us are. We stiffen up.
I'm very loose.
When we're uncertain, we get stiff or we. There's a lot of pauses. And my teachers told me that I need to be less stiff. And it's easier said than done, I think, for certain ways. How can we train ourselves to do it? How can we drill in a certain way to kind of open ourselves up for this?
If you stiff, I think, you know, your game is not going to be, it's much harder to progress your game when you're stiff. The reason is because usually, you know, you're afraid of movement and basically you sort of get stuck and you're just happy in that position and just hoping that it doesn't get worse. That's not the point. The point is to get better. Not the position to get better, but you to get better. So the point is, if you move and you get caught, as long as the guy doesn't rip, you know, you got to sort of be careful who you do that with. If your guy is used to you being stiff, your training partner, and then just, you know, he's used to when he takes that arm lock, taking it hard because you're stiff, he needs to, if you decide like one day, okay, I'm not going to be stiff, he might rip that arm off. So you don't want that. So you have to kind of, you have to, transition into that less stiff game where your training partners now, they don't take it as hard because they know you're not fighting for your life. So they give you a little bit more movement to maneuver and possibly give you a better chance of escaping, because if you do it technically, then it forces their game to go into the next iteration, the next, you know, follow-up, and therefore they get better as well.
That's our problem right there. Neither of us are getting better, Ed.
I told you that we're not getting better.
Especially.
I told you that
but
the
now,
other day.
I feel like I flow like water when I'm beating up one of my white belts.
Yeah, but that's, and then it's in your head. Then you have to open up with the better guys. You know, it becomes sometimes when there's too much, the ego does come into play. Everybody says you can't have any ego, but you know, the reality is there is always that a little bit. It could be a little bit, could be a lot, but you have to kind of let go to some extent that, you know, you have to be able to, again, you got to constantly remind yourself, why am I here? Why
to
am
try
I here?
And tap
to beat
Ed.
This guy, to stall this guy, or to try to get better today.
No, the main reason that I train is I want to be able to tap Ed. And I want to get my black belt before Ed. That's but, it.
Well, one of those things is going to happen. You'll never ever tap me, though.
I'm going to tap you. I tapped him before, just so we're clear. I have tapped him
in 2007,
before.
He got me. I was a white belt. He got me.
He remembered it, though. That's the weirdest part.
Forever.
I don't remember that. He remembers this one time.
I think that's one of the things that you're talking about that holds me back is I do have an identity in my jiu-jitsu game about not being tapped. It's like something I hold my hat on. It's like I'm hard to tap, but I take a lot of punishment and beatings, and I am tough, but it is easy to just, if I didn't get tapped this round, I could pat myself on the back and be like, it's not that bad. Instead of being like, all right, I didn't do anything new. I didn't progress anything. I didn't take any chances. And it's a battle that I have every day. It's a different, sometimes I'm better and I'll open up. And then other days I'm like, no, I think I'm just going to lay.
You open up? When do you open up?
Well, when I was on top of you yesterday. When I'm on top, I open up.
Oh, do you? Okay. Yeah. Did you submit me?
No.
Good. Did you throw up, though?
I threw up.
Yeah, perfect.
So that means I was working hard. At least I'm getting the cardio up.
You didn't throw up for me. You weren't working that hard.
I know. I wasn't working that hard. That's what's sad about it. So you have these different affiliates now, and you're starting to delegate. Like, you can't teach at all these schools that you have. So we're both brown belts, and we're aspiring black belts. What is your kind of criteria? How do you form your black belts, and what does it take to be a black belt? Because you just said yourself that technique is not the end all be all. There's a lot of other factors that go into it.
Well, you know, I think to be a black belt, I think you got to have the technical proficiency. That's number one. It all starts with that. If you don't have the technical proficiency, you should not be a black belt. If you don't like jiu-jitsu, you should not be a black belt. Because I think there's some people that are now pursuing black belt because, well, before pre-COVID, nobody knows how it's going to look after, but you know, because they thought that, you know, the traditional martial arts were losing sort of their appeal to the population. So they want to get black belts, and they basically like piling on as a means to make money rather than actually being interested in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. To me, it's anything that you're not interested in, just doing it as a way to make money, I think ultimately is not going to be successful, because people could tell if you like the stuff, if you have passion for it, and they want to be part of it. And if you don't, then they can feel it. You know, eventually that's going to be show up. So, but technical ability is the first thing that I look for. And then, you know, you also look for seasoning. You know, it's different for different people. You know, there's always a band of technical ability and physical ability within each belt. People think that there's one magical sort of standard and that everybody has to meet that standard. And if they don't, they're never going to make it. It's ultimately it's martial arts, and martial arts is an art. It's not a science. You know, there's no precise criteria for a black belt, no precise criteria for a brown belt. It's when people think that you've have the technical ability, you've grown to be that belt, you know?
Now, are you watching your students just on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah.
Or do you have testing at all?
No. I watch on a day-to-day basis.
Perfect.
So when I see somebody, you know, whatever level they are and they're starting to get good, I start to pay a little more attention to their game to see if they've gotten to the next step. If, you know, I give stripes only white and blue belts. I don't give purple and brown belts stripes. So I basically, you know, once you get to purple, I think you know enough about Brazilian jiu-jitsu to know that, you know, this is a long distance race, and, you know, you should be okay to just kind of suck it up without stripes. And I just kind of, like I said, if, you know, if somebody's approaching that next belt, I sort of like pay attention, see how long they've been training, you know, are they sort of the version of a purple belt or brown belt or whatever belt that for their sort of physical aspects, for their responsibilities in life and so forth, where they should be for that belt.
So when does teaching come to account? Like, I assume that you want your black belts and brown belts to be able to teach well. How early blue belts, like, do you look for them to pull people aside, or how they teach?
Well, you know, we usually, especially in the fundamental classes, I usually partner up the junior, you know, new people with a more senior belt. And I'm hoping that belt helps them out. And, you know, certain people have it and certain people don't. If they don't have it, I try to help them out. But, you know, some of them don't want to listen. So if they don't want to listen, then you're not going to be a teacher, you know, because if you insist on overcorrecting, you know, like, I've had guys that just literally the guy can't get a single rep in because, and I explained to him, I'm like, dude, do you understand this is his maybe third day on the mats? Do you think he's going to do this perfect? If he does it half-ass right, that's a good job for him that day. If everybody came to class and whatever move we're teaching got it perfectly, man, everybody be black belt in 3 years. So the point is, there is, you know, like, sometimes you got to get enough reps. And if the guy just keeps talking, I'm like, I will pull the guy aside and I'm going to say, listen, I appreciate you trying to help him out, but you're trying to help him out too much. First of all, you're doing damage to his psyche because the guy starts to think that he's not getting anything right. Second of all, you're not helping him out because he's not getting any reps in. Let him get some reps in. Let him do it, you know, partially right. That's, you know, eventually he'll get it fully right.
I feel like you're speaking right to me. When I was a new blue belt, I was doing exactly that. I would pull people and I would just talk their ear off. I'd tell them all the knowledge that I had inside me, I just exploded onto them and try to stick it to them. And as I've progressed, I've seen the failings of that and what happens, and they don't get better. As you're actually hindering them to an extent. So whenever I work with somebody new, which is one of my favorite things, is to just one piece.
Yeah.
This is the main thing.
Just a little bit, my small adjustments.
Yeah, if you could, like you were saying, the one thing, if you could pull one thing, that's all we want at a time, because all the days you train, you start adding these up, and they'll stick better than if I throw everything I got at you about this position.
Absolutely.
You can overwhelm them. Yeah.
So then if there's one aspect of instructing or teaching a new student, what do you think is the most important thing as a teacher for new students? Like, if there's one thing, like patience, or is there a certain detail or a tip that you could give a new student that an instructor should be doing? Do you think that there's one thing that stands out?
Inspire. I think any teacher's job is to inspire students, because if you inspire a student, they will continue to study, they will continue to get better. If you're a teacher and you cannot inspire your students, you're not a good teacher. Doesn't matter how good your technical abilities are, because, you know, then your students, if they don't want to study that whatever topic you're presenting them, you also want, I mean, I'm going to expand on that. I know you didn't ask the question, but I think as a teacher, you've got to have passion for what you're teaching. If you don't, then just get the hell out. Just get out of the way.
That's an absolute. You know? I see more and more, like you have said, about people just wanting to get the belt so they can open a school or teach. I see more and more people just kind of taking that traditional martial arts route rather than being passionate about what they're doing, being passionate about teaching.
Yeah, and you got to continually learn. You got to be a continued, you know, if somebody puts a gun to my head and says, okay, teacher or student, it's easy, because you can't be a teacher without a student, without being a student, you know? So if you don't continually improve, then at some point, I think our art is to our profession to a large extent is very unique in the world, because, you know, usually if you're a lawyer, basically you just continually learn only through, you know, through practice rather than actually continuing training for yourself. You know what I'm saying? Or if you're any other profession, there's not a lot of continuing training in a lot of professions. Basically, you go to school, become whatever you're going to become, and now you know pretty much everything there is to know, and you work for 30, 40, 50 years. Whereas in jiu-jitsu, I think there's a continual, the idea of trying to constantly acquire more knowledge and continue to build.
I agree with that. We've been talking about this the past couple episodes, the yin and the yang.
What did you say? and the yang, right from Ed's lips. I love it. Keep going.
We shouldn't have to pick between teacher or student. I think we should be equal parts teacher and student. Yeah. And I think the people that have trouble kind of teaching at first, you know, I think it's our goal as the upper belts to kind of still encourage them. Like, you're not good at teaching right now, but this will supremely help your game and everybody else around you if you could show it and do it as well. So we were just talking about technique is a big part of being promoted, teaching. How much does competition come in to when you're promoting? Not at all. No.
That's a repeating factor here too.
No.
Competition does not come into belt promotions.
People think that somehow because they compete that they're better at keeping it real or whatever you want to call it, that they know how to defend themselves or that's the only measure. It's BS. Here's the reality. If you go to competition, there may be a guy that's like amazing and he just literally just can't mentally handle it. If he has to use jiu-jitsu for self-defense, there is no 2 weeks not sleeping at night thinking about the competition and how he's going to possibly disappoint his coach or his teammates, which again, guys, that's not the case. If you're in a self-defense scenario, it's go or not go right then and there. That's it. There is no 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 months lead up to it where you trying to pick up a strategy and you may have an adrenaline dump. In self-defense scenario, you go, right? So competition is not necessarily a predictor of that. The other thing is, so a lot of people also criticize, you know, and I agree to a large extent, especially some of the high level belts matches have gotten extremely boring where two guys double guard pull and, you know, kind of sweep each other, baron ball back and forth. But the reality is, you know, people think, oh, you know, that's jiu-jitsu. Well, because they're so evenly matched, they're trying to eke out a minor advantage. Whereas, you know, if they were in a self-defense scenario, double leg the guy, take him down, mount, and, you know, arm lock him or choke him. So again, you got to distinguish between the two aspects. You know, Jiu-Jitsu, to a large extent, is very self-correcting, and it also shows you how effective it is. You know, when you're training, with people, it shows if you have a good game or not. You don't need competition. I don't need competition for that, because, you know, some training partners are going to put it, you know, going to give you a little bit harder time. They're going to be, you know, not as, you know, quotes friendly or flow roll. Sometimes you're going to have to go hard. You know, some of the training sessions are as intense as competition. So yeah, you don't need competition at all.
I think that's very important what you just said. Is it safe to assume that the trust in your training partners is more important the older you get in the sport, with regards to keeping your body safe and, you know, learning in a safe environment without getting hurt?
Yeah, it is. This is a bit of an interesting topic for me, because it is, but also, you know, I've had people that want to train with me, you know, and I use that word in quotes. If I'm beat up and you show up at my school and you want to train with me, I mean, it's happened to me, like, where I had a guy from foreign country. Oh, my instructor told me I need to train with you. I don't know you from a hole in the wall, you know. Well, why don't you go train with that guy? So he trained with my blue belt, triangled him, and I said, okay. So now he wants to train with me again. Okay, let's go. I'm going to go hard. Because I understand that you're there for one reason. You're not there to help my game get better. You're not concerned about me because you know nothing about my training regimen. You don't understand what is my weekly schedule. Today was my easy day, but you want to train with me. So basically, you're selfish in that sense because you want to feel my game. Well, let me tell you something. You're not going to like it.
Thinking of you as the chew toy again.
Yeah. And basically that's what it is, you know, and you're not going to like it. And you know, then don't complain. Oh, he beat me up. Well, what do you expect when you show up in somebody's school and I want to train with you? What other, you know, other sport can you just show up and it's okay. You know, I'll kick it up. So I basically, with my training partners, they know what today is my hard day. Today is my easy day. If somebody shows up, they just don't have that knowledge, then I'm going to protect myself. And it becomes more important as you go through the years.
So how many days a week are you training hard now? Or even 3 days a week?
Hard.
Multiple times a day on those days?
No, I'll train one day. I don't have in me, as you could tell, I don't have any artificial help. So I will train one day, and then I may teach, you know, two classes or something, but I will just train one times that day. But I'll train hard 3 days and 4 days easy. So usually, depending, you know, on what's going on in the world, am I, traveling, teaching seminars, usually I will train 3 to 4 times a week hard and 3 to 4 times more for just improvement, drilling, flow rolling, training in the pool and stuff like that.
So you bring it back around to something that I wanted to talk about, but we kind of got diverted. When you said that you would pick student over teacher.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about training. What do you do for yourself to improve? You just mentioned drilling. Do you do any take any instruction from anyone, seminars or anything like that?
Well, I'll go, you know, like before COVID, I was going, you know, I went to, you know, Henzo Gracie Academy. That's my, you know, that's my tribe. That's where I'm, you know, on a regular basis. But, you know, now with things, I basically, you know, I've been in New Jersey pretty much for the last 5.5 months. Is it 5.5 months? Yeah. So, you know, you can, you know, that in such a case, I will basically work on things that are either ancillary to my game or that I'm, you know, I have certain things. And, you know, once people, if you have good training partners, they will start to counter them. So when they start to counter them, I need to figure out a counter. And then I work on that counter and then I start to nail them with the new counter. Until they start to figure out how to counter that, then it's just like a never-ending cycle. The reason I said that is because at one point I had one of my students that unbeknownst to me had a drug problem, and he was teaching. He was a good competitor. He was teaching, and when I realized, you know, one day he walked in and he was high as a kite, I think, and it was the first time I ever seen it. I was like, listen, that's it. You can't teach for me. And he basically quit because if he couldn't be a teacher, he didn't want to be a student. So I just did not understand that mentality. I didn't throw him out of the school because I knew he probably needed some sort of help, you know, help, you know, guiding hand, but you can't teach. But, you know, you have to, I think, to be a good teacher, you got to be a continuing student. And you got to, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's, you know, you may still have guys that continue to improve their knowledge and improve their technical abilities and adding on to their arsenal. But in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, we have a unique opportunity among a lot of martial arts, a lot of sports. We actually get to test it all, like on a real basis all the time. And, you know, so it's just a never ending process of self-improvement, or, you know.
That's an interesting topic you just touched on, how you went through that with your student. How much of a role do you play off the mats? Like, how much of a relationship do you have with your students, or do you think you should have to keep them coming on the mats? Maybe they're taking breaks. Like, I take a lot of breaks, and maybe, you know they should be back on the mats. Do you reach out to them?
Oh, yeah. It bothers me, because I want people, you know, obviously I want people to be happy, but I also want them to like jiu-jitsu as much as I like it. And if, you know, if they've been training, if they train on a long-term basis, clearly they like it. They just need to get on a habit of training more consistently. Sometimes stuff comes up, but shouldn't come up on a more consistent basis. You know what I'm saying? You need to get on a schedule that you can live with.
Ed knows exactly what you're saying.
Well, as you could tell, I was looking him in the eyes when I was saying that.
That's great.
We're doing great though, right?
Yes, I know. He said it. We've said it over and over. 2020 closed for 4 months or however many months gyms were closed. This is Ed's best year of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu since we've been training together.
Now, why is that? I'm curious, because
this podcast, it kind of put things in perspective, focus. We've been talking to a lot of very influential people. I mean, you're basically one of the pillars of this community for North Jersey.
Oh, thank you.
And no, seriously, that's why we're doing this, because people got to know, like, if it wasn't for guys like you, there wouldn't be gyms every other town. And it wouldn't be so easy to train. You just kept talking about how it was hard to train once or twice a week. And we're very thankful and grateful. So now that we're getting a chance to talk to you, you know, we have all these similarities that obviously, because you are the ones that taught us, even if it's indirectly, it's making me think, like, I got to get on the mats. I got to earn this. Like, I shouldn't be able to talk to you unless I'm proving it.
What's the other reason, Ed?
What's the other reason?
They told you couldn't.
They told me I couldn't. So I was like, I got to do it.
You took it away from him, and now he wanted it even more.
The other thing is, you have like regular training partners during the lockdown.
We, unfortunately, you trained a little bit.
A tiny bit.
I, for some reason, followed the rules. I did not train. I was also worried. I didn't know how severe it was, and I was still working. So I work in a really big company. There's a lot of people around. People at my job were getting sick, and I didn't want to be the reason that anyone I knew was infected. So yeah. I did not train for almost 4 months.
I think what people did, and, you know, that's probably the path that I would have recommended, is just basically get one training partner and just stay with that guy for the duration. You know, make sure that he has the same, I keep referring to circle of contact, you know, so if his circle of contact is small. People don't understand, and, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu being close, that, you know, if you train, it's basically whoever that guy's been in contact for the last week, that's, you adopted every single one of those people.
Yeah.
Not just plus one, it's plus whatever.
Right.
You know, so I've been really kind of trying to drill that into my students' heads, just to really be careful, try to, you know, that's like, I don't know, for the people listening, it's, you know, we're probably, what, 15 feet apart right now, you know, because I'm reserving my circle of contact for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I want to try to keep as, you know, few people as possible, because that's where I'm going to, you know, if you want to go out to parties, man, don't come to train, you know, because you want to use that circle of contact for that stuff, man, that's up to you, but don't come to train.
Right.
I agree with this, because if you look at it, like, from a jiu-jitsu perspective, the game's always changing. You can't stay, it can't always be the way you want. So in real life too, as things change, you got to adapt and just keep learning and adjusting, and think that's the best way to get through it.
There's a saying, where there's a will, there's a way.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Have we said, just for Ed though, I have to make sure that I mention this, have we said perspective yet this episode?
No, not yet.
Ed says that every episode, perspective is said. So I just wanted to put it out there and make sure that perspective was said in this episode.
One of the things that, you know, doing this is a lot of fun for us too, is because we try to take the way we learn jiu-jitsu and learn this. And one of the things we come up upon is we repeat a lot of words. So we're trying to keep it fresh. And
as much as we repeat words, we are pretty good when it comes to the ums and likes. We don't really say that, but there are definitely words we repeat. So I want to repeat something here because I kind of want to bicker back and forth with you a little bit. I have thoughts. I've heard you say that this is an academy, not a gym.
Correct.
Why not a gym?
Well, when you come to a gym, you walk in, you check in, and put your bag in the locker room, and you work out. And nobody says anything to you, hopefully. So it's clear it's an academy. This is a place of learning. You want to kick ass, sign up for a fight. You want to kick ass, go to a tournament. You want to learn, this is the place for you. And you will learn to do well in a fight. You will learn to do well in a tournament. But ultimately, people come to learn.
Now, I've put my foot in my mouth because you described it much better in this podcast than the other podcast I heard, so I can't even bicker with you.
I don't remember what I said in that other podcast.
I had a counter to what you said, but not this time.
How about this one? Heel hooks in the gi? Yes or no?
No?
Oh, yes.
Heel hooks.
Thank you.
No gi, yes, but not in the gi because people don't expect it. So when you heel hook somebody in the gi, they may not expect it and they may react in a way that winds up in an injury. People are used to, you know, in a no-gi situation, they know it's possible, so therefore they're ready, should be ready for it at least.
Do you think IBJJF should adopt heel hooks no-gi for?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Perfect. Yes.
He agrees with everything you say.
I know, because he's smart, like, right? So we were talking about it on the ride over here, and I actually was wondering how you would feel about this, because old school, 91, we're talking about, back then, we were doing heel hooks. I mean, I wasn't there then, but when I started in 2006, we were doing heel hooks in the gi. Were you doing heel hooks in the gi back then?
I don't remember. Okay. But, you know, back then, you know, people were doing a lot of stupid things. You know, they still do. But, you know, guys used to, I remember one time this guy comes in, like, no rash guard, no t-shirt, just shorts. And he's covered in a ringworm,
oh.
You know? And back then people didn't even know what it was, you know? It's like, how can you not see there's something happening to your body, after, you know? But now it's much more, you know, people are much more aware of things. I think, you know, I would be in favor of IBJJF allowing, allowing heel hooks, no gi, and, you know, eventually you could expand it to the gi as well. But, you know, right now I think the way most, there's so many different rule sets. I think with the gi, it's safer to just not allow heel hooks. There's just no point in that.
I'm in total agreement with you. Ed is not very smart. He thinks that you should allow everything all the time, no matter what, white
belts,
black belts. That's exactly what you said. You can go back and listen. But now, just because you mentioned a couple of times, I know that we're talking specifically no-gi, but you mentioned people training without a rash guard. How about for the gi? Now, in 2020, with hygiene and everything's much cleaner, or at least we're trying to be much more clean than we were. Gis are being washed, hopefully, every class. Their rash guards are more readily available. Do you think that in training, maybe not in competition, but do you think in training that everyone should be wearing a rash guard under their gi?
No, because I don't require that in my school.
Yes.
So if I thought, I would. I know there are schools that require a rash guard under the gi. You know, in competition, you usually don't. And therefore, I try to just, you know, like, it's, again, competition is not a big part. But still, sort of, you know, you should be doing what, you know, kind of prepare for, possibly if you wanted to compete, this is how it's going to be. You know, and suddenly like, oh man, I have a rash guard. No, you got to take it off.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm preparing for competition. I can't be in a rash guard.
Now, have you ever pulled any of your students aside and said, hey, listen up, Ed, do you, maybe you should wear a rash guard while training. Have you ever done that?
The only way I would, I think even like a very hairy chest may not possibly make me say that. You can't have different, you know, standards for different students. So it's either all rash guards or no rash guards.
I like that. No hypocrisy.
You know, you have to have the same standard, you know. So if you got a really furry guy, you know, it may be nice if you wore a rash guard, but not required.
It's a combination of the fur and the belly. He's constantly trying to just choke me using his belly button.
Yeah, that's, but you know, So let's do this scenario where the guy's actually wearing a rash guard, but his belly is so big that it pops out from underneath the rash
guard.
That's me
too.
So he's facing the same problem.
You also refuse to acknowledge the sized gi you should be wearing.
I'm trying to live in a different reality. I've been wearing an A2 for 13 years. He's trying to make me go up to A3. It's not happening.
He borrowed an A3 the other day. This thing fit beautifully. But
well,
he won't do it.
The only thing is you got to see if it's legal or not. If it's illegal, you
I
have
know,
to
I
switch.
I should get one of those gi checkers.
The one I was wearing last night is my most illegal gi. It shrunk, I feel like.
It was almost up to your elbows.
Yeah. That's almost no gi then.
Yeah.
So when you talk about how things have changed, people aren't just coming in with ringworm anymore. It's because everybody's more educated. There's a lot of schools, YouTube, competitions. I mean, how do you feel about where jiu-jitsu is now? I mean, not COVID. Like, once this is all over, how do you feel the state of jiu-jitsu is compared to...
It's grown. It's like cars, you know, it's evolving. It's technically, you know, and every sport, and I don't consider jiu-jitsu a sport. I consider it a martial art before a sport. But, you know, as time goes on, people get better at the technique, gets more precise, more evolved, easier to disseminate. So it's good. You know, I think it's good. I think there's so much resources available right now. You know, I encourage people to basically find a teacher that suits their personality. You know, if you have a guy that resonates with you, you're going to learn quicker than a guy that, you know, maybe he knows more than this guy, but you just don't understand what he's saying.
Where do you see the future of jiu-jitsu? How much further up can we go? Like, have we reached the limit of what it's going to be? Or
No.
For the amount of people, I mean. Like,
or I think jiu-jitsu is going to, you know, I think COVID is going to give it a pause, but I think it's going to continue to grow. To me, it's one of the best things I've ever come across. You know, I think the thing that when you go into a school that's a good fit for people, you learn something interesting. There's no end to the learning. You are in contact with people that have your back, because they respect sort of the effort and the commitment and sucking it up that goes into that. I think it's a great thing. And I think the more people find out about it, the more people are interested in joining. I think people start to understand that these are academies. These are not fight clubs. You know, you want to have a fight club. It's a club. It's a club of guys that have similar mindset and they just want to bash heads. And, you know, any new person comes in, it's going to be basically beaten up and, you know, they're going to progress very slowly and probably not learn that much. You know, so that's why most of the schools are called academies. Silver Fox BJJ Academy, you know, Marcelo Garcia Academy, Henzo Gracie Academy, you know, Hodge Gracie Academy. It's just, we are schools. People come here for, you know, to learn. Yeah, you're going to, you know, if you want to, you want to have a hard sparring session, we'll make that available for sure. But after that, we're going to shake hands and we're going to, you know, walk out smiling.
I'll be smiling.
Why?
Because I hurt you last night. I love hurting you.
You like hurting me? Yeah. That makes you feel good about yourself?
I feel great.
Putting people down?
Just you.
Just a typical bully.
Yeah,
you're
I'm a
typical bully. I also wanted to add in the list of great gyms, Core Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy.
Well, you got to plug. We'll plug after this. What are you talking about? So you talked about that one experience you had with a guy he was coming for you to train specifically with you. How do you feel about when your students go train other places or you have visitors come to your school?
Well, normally we have no problem. Like, I mean, literally, I don't care if right now make the exception, we had one guy and a guy walked in and I think he was training in somebody's garage in Florida. He walked in. We gave him one of our older students, like a shorter guy. And at the time, the guy was a brown belt. And this guy tried to just murderize him. And my student got ticked off and beat the piss out of him. Next thing I know, this guy is walking out of my academy without a shirt, pants hanging halfway down his ass, and dropping F-bombs left and right. Why would I want that guy in my academy? Ever. We have a drop-in fee, but we almost always waive it. Even for $30 or whatever, drop it. Why would I want that? I don't care about the $30. Just don't even come. So now what we do is if you're part of a legitimate academy, I don't care if it's our tribe or it could be anybody else's tribe, we let people come in and pretty much universally waive the drop-in fee. Right now during COVID, I am allowing students to train only at my schools. They have to choose because I can control to some extent or to a large extent the cleaning protocols and training protocols in my academy, not at somebody else's. Even if it's a sister or brother school, it doesn't matter. So right now we have restrictions, but during normal times, although if you do become a senior member of the academy, you can train at competed like academies that we compete against. You know, you want to compete against us, no problem, go there. You want to compete for us, stay here. You should not have two homes.
For competitors or for all upper belts?
For competitors.
Competitors, but,
you
okay.
know, at some point, I think anybody that's not getting their what they believe that, you know, that they need to go elsewhere to a different tribe, I don't mind if they leave. Because, you know, to be honest with you, I do believe that I have a significant, either through my own training and through, you know, the Hands Over Academy, that we do have a lot of high level, high tech stuff. And if we're going to disseminate it to other people, I'd rather have it done in competition than or fill in a DVD.
So, again, I would just want to bring up, because I had listened to another podcast, I heard that you did 99 days of online training in a row.
Yeah.
Was that accessible to everyone or just your students?
To everybody.
To everyone. Yeah. And if anyone wanted to, is it somewhere you can view
it's
it
on
now?
It's on YouTube. Just go to Silver Fox okay. BJJ YouTube channel. We called it the Antivirus Edition. It was pretty cool because, you know, when I shut down my school, I basically said, okay, we're going to do daily filming. We're going to do a daily online class. We used to do it monthly. We're back to monthly. But now I'm thinking about going to weekly. But it's basically same time, same place, so it's live. We started live on Facebook, then we migrated to YouTube because it's better video quality. And so during the shutdown, we did 99 straight days. And people would, 3 weeks later, are, when is the next one? I said, daily. Well, what about Saturday? Well, the last time I checked, Saturday is a day. What about Sunday? Well, the last time I checked, Sunday is a day. So we did it every single day. It's interactive, which, you know, not a lot of people do. So basically, people have a chance to ask questions. And we basically troubleshoot technique. We troubleshoot, you know, we provide some BJJ philosophy or strategies for training and so forth. It's usually half an hour, almost always we run over. And it created like a pretty cool, they call themselves Antivirus Tribe. So a lot of the people that were watching on a regular basis, we literally had people from all over the world. Literally, we had Australians, Malaysia, Singapore, Japan, India, Israel, Morocco, Algeria, South Africa, Sweden, Greece, Poland, Germany, Czech, France, UK, Canada, US, Costa Rica, Venezuela, Brazil. Like literally the only continent we didn't hit was Antarctica. Although one Serbian guy volunteered to go colonize the penguins.
So that he could watch.
So we could watch. But so it's on Silver Fox BJJ YouTube channel. It's somebody classified it. So there's actually a Google document that actually tells you what specific technique was covered in which episode.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, this Friday is actually, by the way, this Friday, the 10:30, where the regular monthly one is. Today's Wednesday, yeah.
Okay. So then another thing that I heard you say, I believe you were talking specifically about this, YouTube, was consistency. Consistency is key. You said you didn't care what the numbers were, that you were going to continue to push it out every day.
Yeah.
Because it was important to you. Do you feel that everything you do in life should be that way?
No.
No.
Only the things that are important. Only...
That's
so
true.
Ed eating McDonald's should happen every day.
No.
What do you mean? If you throw up every day, you're going to lose weight.
Then I'll ruin my esophagus.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be side effects.
So that's something that I keep trying to tell him. We say it all the time. We just chug along. It's the same thing when I opened my academy. It's everything is slow growth. But if it's something that you love, like we love this podcast, and every day the numbers just grow and grow.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's very slow growth. But to us, the most important thing is that we keep doing it. We have an episode every week, and we just stay consistent. And I really, just like you, I feel like it pays off.
Yeah, if you don't, like, you know, when I wanted to do it, I opened it to everybody, not just my students, because I wanted to. I knew, like, at the time, Italy, you know, I have friends in Italy, you know, I've done seminars there, and they were locked down, you know, I don't know, 2 to 4 weeks before us, and I know they were having a hard time. So I wanted to make it available to anybody. And you know, to be honest, did I expect to do 99 straight days? No, I thought it was going to be. I sort of knew it was going to be more than 30, but I thought it was going to be less than 60. When we started doing it, I, you know, about 2 weeks into it, because usually the guy that I was filming, I was basically using the same guy, one guy behind the camera and one guy on the mats. And afterwards we trained pretty hard. And after about 12, 13 days, I said, guys, we're going to have to really be careful because we're going to have to do this. We may have to do this for a while. And, you know, people are like, well, you're going to do it for, I said, as long as it takes, you know, as long as it takes, we just keep plugging along. If the only thing that would make me stop is if I break. If fortunately, I did not break.
He's very consistent. 99 days at his age. Ed, what's your problem?
Well, which I'm trying to be more like him. This is why we're interviewing them, because I want to learn from them, take some and give them some love by sharing their content.
Maybe you're just yin to his yang or whatever.
Well, one of the main reasons we started this is because we're trying to build the community starting from Jersey. I mean, most of the people we've interviewed so far are guys like you who are Henzo.
He was the guy that basically got, you know, like before, nobody else was here. You know, we were lucky that Henzo moved to New Jersey.
Yeah, so when you're talking about people coming to your gym and not acting correctly, part of the thing I want to do here is to teach people, you know, how to act, because I like to go around to other schools and just learn. Everybody teaches different. Every person you roll with has a unique footprint. And it's fun to go out there and train with them. So if you ever go to a school, my main motto is to give the energy that they're looking for. Set your expectations low, because some gyms have different rules. Be prepared to play a little different. And if you do that, I think we could spread this through the internet and through in person, because I think you need both and you should use both as your asset. So we're going to get ready to wrap this up.
And we're going to finish with a question that I have.
Go ahead. Let's do it.
All right. So somehow in us doing this podcast, Ed and I have come up with this idea that we're going to have a challenge match just between us, friends, that everybody gets to watch. Ed's Grandmaster Sensei Yanni is going to break it down on YouTube and pick out everything we've done wrong, mostly wrong, because there's not going to be anything right. And it's going to be just pure entertainment for everyone. But based on talking with us now and looking at us, we need you to pick the winner. Who do you think it's going to be?
Well, you
big, fat, strong Ed or weak, old, fragile Dave?
Ed, are you going to have McDonald's beforehand?
No, absolutely not.
Then I'm going to give you my answer. You can't make a prediction, because you can't just look at somebody. Unless you could, I can make a prediction once I see the face just before the match. But right now, when everybody's relaxed, the match is way in the future. You can never predict based, you know, you can never look at somebody and sort of have an expectation. You know, particularly in jiu-jitsu. Look at some of the guys, man, that are really top dogs in the world. And, you know, look at them. You see them in the, they look like nothing, but man.
I know that, but I want you to pick one of us anyway.
All right, I'm going to close my eyes.
You want to flip a coin? We're going to flip a coin to see who wins. Ed beats me every time.
Not every time, but...
Not every time? Did you guys hear that? Can you put that part on a loop?
I want him to delete that. So just give us what you got going on in the future, where people will find you.
And some of the things you're selling, the... whatever.
Well, I just did a first BJJ Fanatics DVD, arm bars from everywhere. Guys, I know I don't say this a lot, but this will truly revolutionize your arm bar game. There is things that are very unorthodox. I don't see anybody using them, even at high level, but they're extremely effective. Like, for example, if you look at the video I did with Bernardo, the very first one, the Nogi version of it, you know, if you don't bring the lead leg over the head, once I cross my ankles, my guys can't get out. Now, one of my black belts, the one that spent the most time training this, he's like, if once he crosses his ankles, it's done. So that's on BJJ Fanatics. They said it's doing very well, so I'm going to be doing another one. Everything is basically Silver Fox BJJ. So you go to silverfoxbjj.com, Silver Fox BJJ YouTube channel. So Friday we're doing another, you know, live version. So if you tune in live, you get a chance to answer your questions. That's it.
All right, great. I really want to thank you for your time, Ed.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much for bringing jiu-jitsu to New Jersey, being a big part of it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you being part of this.
Absolutely. Right now.
That was it. We don't know what you just heard because we haven't listened yet.
But it was just yesterday. Why can't we remember yesterday?
I don't know.
You know what it is? It's different while we're trying to have the conversation. We're trying to keep it interesting. And then normally we go back and listen again to get like a refresher. And we don't have to worry about keeping the conversation going. We just get to listen.
I think we're really starting to half-ass this.
Who is we are half-assing it?
Come on, dude.
I am definitely half-assing it. You are still whole-assing it.
No, I've been like three-quarters assing it.
I know. How much did you contribute to the Google Drive that we had?
Basically nothing. But I held my own this conversation. I thought I did a fantastic job interviewing. As usual,
I did much better. You'll hear more of me. You actually just heard me speaking more on this podcast, but the last podcast, I spoke the most in the first 20 minutes, the 20 minutes that you people did not get to listen to because Ed screwed up. This episode, we have it all, and I spoke much more.
But did I make the same mistake again?
No, you did not make the same mistake
exactly.
twice.
That's another thing that I try to pride myself on is not making the same mistake more than once. It's all right to make mistakes.
I do that in life, but not in jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu, I make the same mistakes over and over.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not a good student. We talked about this right before we hit the record button.
Yeah, but are you good at learning in general?
No. Well, yes. I don't know.
Nah, you're good. You learn. I don't know. I think certain things in your jiu-jitsu...
I have to break bad habits.
Yeah, you have certain habits that are just not right. Yeah. Your intuition's driving you down the wrong path.
It's one. It's the same one over and over.
What's the one thing? I guess.
It's always. That's what it is every single time.
Yeah, what's your
time.
Problem on top?
What do you mean? I was doing great on top. I took your back.
Oh, yeah. Today you did. Fine.
And how about my other training partners of the day?
You just love bragging. You're very braggadocious today.
Is braggadocious a word?
For sure it is.
No, but you said you were proud of me. You don't say that often.
No, I was because you were doing good technique. But I
did exactly your game. I did nothing I normally do.
You did a butterfly sweep today, too. That's fantastic. I haven't hit a butterfly sweep in months and months.
But I purposely try not to play butterfly guard except against Dan.
But that's what I like. No. The way where you hit the butterfly sweep was in transition. It wasn't like, all right, I'm going to set up a butterfly sweep. And it didn't telegraph. I think one of the problems you have is you telegraph a lot of the stuff that you're doing. That's when I'm slowing you down. It's because I could see the thing coming.
But usually that's because we get stuck in a position.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. If you're going to hit butterfly sweeps or half guard sweeps, they really should be in a scramble in transition, though you'll be more successful.
How'd you like the, I forget. I don't know. I had a brain fart.
You're getting old. It's all right.
I am getting old.
I don't hold it against
you. I'm tired, too. You know, it's the end of the night. I'm always a little bit tired, but it's not like Friday. When we record on Friday night, I'm worthless. So we are waiting for feedback. Please, everybody out there, give us some feedback. And no one has made a single suggestion on someone that we should interview for the podcast. Last time, or maybe the time before that, we suggested, hey, if there's somebody you want to hear, reach out. Reach out to them. Reach out to us, and I'll reach out to them. But if there's somebody that you would like to hear or even questions that you would like to ask that person, email to thedeathpodcast@gmail.com.
Or if you want to just listen to us, you could text Dave because he would really love to hear that, and then maybe I'll listen.
No, you won't listen.
I'll listen if we get five people to say it.
Five people that just want to hear me and you.
Sure.
I think we can get five people.
Email to thedeathpodcast@gmail.com.
That's all of our listeners, though. So that's 100% of our listeners want just us. Do you think that's going to happen?
That's not true.
I know.
But also, you could reach us at To The Death Podcast on all social media or tothedeathpodcast.com. You can't talk to us there, but just go
there. There's a contact us.
Oh, there's there? Yeah.
On our website, tothedeathpodcast.com, there is a contact us area. It'll send a direct message or an email right to us.
Listen, just send us emojis, something. I just wanted something.
Ed wants poop emojis and cheeseburgers.
Actually, I would like a thumbs up emoji. And a heart.
A heart?
Yeah, for love.
Have I ever sent you a heart?
No. A lot of eggplants.
I was going to say that, but I'm like, that's not the proper comment for this podcast. I've never sent you an eggplant.
That's not true.
I'm going to scroll through my phone.
I've sent you eggplants for sure.
Have you?
Maybe.
I don't know.
All right. What else? How about our sponsor? We got this great sponsor, Core BJJ. You can follow them at CoreBJJNJ on all social medias. Also, their terrific website, CoreBJJNJ.com. You could also give them feedback or give them reviews on their Google, Facebook, all these things, because it's a great place to train. That's why I'm learning and getting better, David.
I taught you something.
You did.
And remember, listeners, it's Core Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy.
Oh, Academy. We talked about academies today.
Academy. That's the legal name.
What do you think about that whole Academy talk we had today?
He shut me down quick. I had a thought from a podcast I listened to.
But what was it? I don't even know what you were trying to go for there.
I don't remember now. I wanted to argue with him. Just not really an argument. Just kind of go back and forth a little bit. Get more out of the conversation. But
you didn't want to just be a yes man?
No yes men here. Never.
I think we need to do more pre-show prep. I think we got to do it. Remember when we did it for our episode? I was so confident doing
that. I can
that.
Show you the Google Drives where we both have contributed versus the last couple that it's been a solo performance by me.
Even just Google Drives, there's times when we've just made the Google Drive from far away. I like to sit with the board and talk through it.
Sure, there's definitely something to that. But because of our busy schedules with what you were doing right now, we haven't been able to sit down like that. The Google Drive was doing that for us, but at least the last three episodes, you have not contributed at all.
Okay.
On the drive.
I'm saying that I'm trying to fix that and we'll be better.
I'll text you.
Text
contribute. I'm just going to text you.
No,
contribute.
That's not how it works.
And an eggplant.
You got to help motivate me. You don't know how to motivate me. I'm still
thumbs up
you.
And a heart.
I'm still trying to teach you how to motivate me to do better. I want everybody else that's listening to know that you could always do better.
No, you're manic depressive. I don't know how to motivate you.
Nobody does, not even myself.
This podcast is doing it.
It is, but I have been feeling, I've been hitting that wall.
Oh,
I've been hitting
boy.
It. Listen, this is, always happens to everybody. You have to hit a wall. You can't like it forever, right? There's got to be some kind of adversity.
I like everything.
Yeah, this people quit this all the time.
Who quit?
No, I'm saying people have started and stopped things, podcasts, anything. Videos.
Oh, we talked about this the last
episode.
Yeah,
so I'm hitting that little resistance and I got to push past it. And I need you to help me.
You can do it. What, do you want me to push you?
Yeah. Pick me up.
I'm definitely not going to pick
carry
you up.
Carry me.
Definitely not going
to
carry
threshold.
You. Across the threshold.
To success.
That I will do.
All right.
Me and Gary, because I can't do it on my own.
Nope. Gary's been coming to me. I've been seeing him every Saturday. We have new business ideas. I'm probably going to leave you in the dust pretty soon. Quit this. Start my own thing with Gary.
Okay. You'll have one listener.
Talk about
it. I'll always listen.
Oh, good. You'd like that?
I would.
You know, the reason to start is because you like listening to me talk in the first place.
I know.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. A lot of things. Do you want me to start listing them? We don't have that kind of time.
Nah, I don't want to depress people. Well,
we haven't recapped the episode at all.
Yeah, we talked about how we talked about the Academy thing.
We talked about how we talked about.
Carl, you know, he's taking this COVID very seriously, like we all are, and we look forward to training with him once things are more back to normal.
That was interesting. While I was trying to set up the interview with him, he has been the only person that we've interviewed that was actually very worried. Maybe not worried is the right word. Cautious. When we recorded this interview, he was at least 15 feet away from us for the whole entire interview.
Yes, and we respect that. You got to respect what people are doing, and
I didn't have a problem with it. It was interesting to me.
I know you have other thoughts on it. Are you going to keep them to yourself, or are you going to elaborate on them?
That was it.
Yeah, but what's interesting
Why do
about
you
it?
Think that there's anything deep going on in here?
I don't know.
There's nothing deep going
you
on in here.
You just have surface thoughts.
I unleash. I pour everything that I have out onto this microphone. Or once we hang up the mics, do we hang up the mics?
Yeah.
Once we hang up the mics, I spill the beans to you in real life. How do you feel about that? Do you like being in the know?
Sometimes I wish you would just keep it to yourself. What do we got coming up? Just
I
us?
Talked to your Grandmaster Sensei today.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
What did you say to him?
I just wanted to see how he was doing, check in, say hi.
He's doing fine.
Okay, but I wanted to talk to him.
I haven't seen him because I haven't been going to his classes.
I know, he actually mentioned you.
No, he didn't.
He said he was disappointed and he wanted me to remove your stripe.
Take it. I just picture you ripping my stripe off.
Idiot.
You know, like when you press that button, I have to do extra on the editing. That makes me do extra. A whole extra track.
Idiot.
No, but the track's already there now. So now you press it as many times, I'll probably just delete it.
Oh, I enjoy this. I really do enjoy this. You know what I was thinking?
Go ahead.
I was thinking that you should bring this, and we should do a special episode from a remote location this weekend. I don't think the family would like that at all, but I was thinking that ahead of time.
You're so far.
Special.
Send me the address to the place, and let me see how far it is from my house. If it's less than an hour, I might do it.
It's less than an hour. It might be an hour on the dot.
If it's 101, I'm not coming.
I don't know if I want you to come anyway. The idea was that you could come, and we could do a special remote
episode. Did we even talk about the dinner we had?
No. Ed finally came over, met the wife. He's already met the wife.
I met
but
your wife.
My wife met your wife.
And my children.
No blood was shed.
No, it was a perfectly reasonable.
And your wife was even able to pretend that we could get along. But the most important of all of this, what did you cook for dinner, Ed?
Eggplante.
And it was delicious.
Yeah,
and eggplant is a disgusting vegetable.
I'm not a big fan of it, but if you cook it right, you could do it. Maybe I should make a video on it. Put that on YouTube. Me making the eggplant, I'll give a little recipe.
Perfect. I had not only seconds, not only thirds, I had four or five servings of this eggplant. What was the dish actually called?
Just eggplant parmesan.
Eggplant parmesan. Did you hear I like slurred a little? Yeah. My mouth started watering when I was thinking about it. That's why.
Well, we built our friendship even closer. And hopefully you will invite us over again.
That's not going to happen.
Okay. It was good while it lasted.
True. Agreed.
Didn't you like listen to my babies cry all the time? It's such a hassle sometimes.
Yeah, but you think that it bothers people. Anyone with kids isn't bothered by that at all.
You're not bothered?
If you went to like, who doesn't have kids? If you like were hanging out with Kyle, he'd be like, and I'm just generalizing. Anyone?
Kyle with, seems very patient.
Yeah, well, I just picked him because he was the only one that came to mind that trains without kids. If you were hanging out with one of your friends that didn't have kids and your kids are sitting there screaming, nobody's listening to that. They're going to be like, shut that kid up. Not me. I'm patient.
What do you say? What's going on in your head? I want more eggplant.
Yeah, that's all I thought about the entire time.
And cookies. I saw you eating a bunch of cookies.
I had two.
Yeah.
And I made you take them with me, with you.
Did I take them? Oh, I did
take
them.
Yeah, you did take them.
Yeah, I took them. I have them in my house, though.
What was the other thing you took? And the salad.
I know. Nobody touched the salad.
How many McDonald's did you have but no salad?
I love that your daughter tried it, and as she's eating it, she's like, yeah, I like everything but this. And it was the eggplant. That was all of it. 90% eggplant. So she was just
eating... Wait, there was eggplant in the salad?
No, she was eating the eggplant itself, but she liked just the sauce and the cheese.
Eggplant is a disgusting vegetable.
We tried to trick them into thinking it's lasagna. Your son didn't care. He had...
No, he was like me.
Yeah, but he loved it.
Yeah, anytime I've had eggplant other than that, though, disgusting. So anyone that wants Ed's recipe, reach out to thedeathpodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on all of our social media at @ToTheDeathPodcast.
And that's it. What do we got coming up next week, buddy boy?
Next week, we are finally going to have our Gi versus No Gi episode.
Oh, are we? Oh, yes. I'm excited for this. Yes, it got pushed back a little bit, but I am very excited to do it because most of our guests have been Gi favored and also openly against the kind of techniques that we're going to be talking about.
Listen, I don't think that there's anyone that we've spoke to that's against heel hooks, No Gi.
Not heel hooks. I'm talking about...
Rubber guard.
Lockdown.
Who's against that?
Most people.
Not me. I love it. I'm a fan of the 10th Planet.
Well,
I even trained there.
I know. I'm excited to talk about it because I had a very biased opinion early on in my jiu-jitsu career, and I'd like to talk to him about it, and I've come more towards the center. As in most things in my life, I'm starting to see both sides of the story.
That's great development on your part, Ed.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm working very hard on it.
I'm proud of you.
I'm glad that you noticed. I'm trying to work on accepting feedback positively as well.
You can give Ed feedback at Sweaty Eddie on Instagram, or you can become his friend on Facebook, Edward Wilson.
Yes. I need more friends.
In real life, not on Facebook.
No, I got lots of friends. Everybody loves me.
In real life?
In all lives. All dimensions.
Dimensions?
Universes.
Interesting. I enjoy the words you've chosen here.
Okay. That's it. I got nothing left. Let's go to bed.
Good night. I'm not going to bed with you.
I know.
Okay. To the Death Podcast. Sing us out, Ed. Sing us out, Ed.
No.
Sing us out, Ed.
I'm not singing.
Sing. You have to. It's becoming a ritual. Row, row, right, row. Right, right.
I wish I'm not good on like the spot, like I'm creating something new. And I was going to do a new thing, but...
Just sing something. What was the song I was singing before?
Here is a story about a man named Davey. I can't do any more than that.
That's fine. I'm glad that you did that. I almost took over and sung the actual song. So I'm glad that you threw that in there. All right.
That's
it. To the Death Podcast.
I hope you guys enjoyed. This is To the Death Podcast.
I said that already.
I said it again.
Episode
21.
In Spanish, please.
21.
I don't like the way you say
it. Sorry. Start again. This is To the Death Podcast.
Episode
21.
Goodbye.